नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नामे। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिता। ओम अज्ञान तिमिरांध्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदामहं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। आजानुलंबित भुजौ कनकावदातौ संकीर्तनैक पितरौ कमलायताक्षौ विश्वम्भरौ द्विजवरौ जुगधर्मपालौ वन्दे जगत् प्रियकरौ करुणावतारौ। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो चैप्टर 17 Punishment and Reward of Kali, Text 19. Kechit Vikalpa Vasana Ahur Atmanam Atmanah Daivam Anne Apare Karma Sabhavam अपरे प्रभुम्। केचिद् विकल्प वशना आहुरात्मानमात्मनः दैवमन्ने परे कर्म स्वभावम् अपरे प्रभुम्। केचिद् विकल्प वशना आहुरात्मानमात्मनः। सम ऑफ देम विकल्प वशना दोज हु डिनाय ऑल काइंड्स ऑफ ड्युअलिटी आहु डिक्लेयर आत्मानम् Own self, Atmanah, of the self, Daivam, superhuman, Anne, others, Apare, someone else, Karma, activity, Swabhavam, material nature, Apare, many other, Prabhum, authorities. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. Please repeat after me. Some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible. While yet others say that activity is responsible. And the gross materialists maintain that the nature is the ultimate cause. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, as referred to above, philosophers like Jaimini and his followers establish that fruitive activity is the root cause of all distress and happiness, and that even if there is a superior authority, some superhuman powerful god or gods, he or they are also under the influence of fruitive activity because the reward results according to one's action. They say that action is not independent because action is performed by some performer. Therefore, the performer himself is the cause of his own happiness and distress. In the Bhagavad Gita 6.5, also it is confirmed that by one's mind, freed from material affection, one can deliver himself from the sufferings of material pangs. So, one should not entangle oneself in matter by the mind's material affections. Thus, one's own mind is one's friend or enemy in one's material happiness and distress. Atheistic materialistic Shankarites conclude that material nature is the cause of all causes. According to them, combinations of material elements are the cause of material happiness and distress. According to them, combinations of material elements are the causes of material happiness and distress, and disintegration of matter is the cause of freedom from all material pangs. Gautam and Kanad find that atomic combination is the cause of everything, and impersonalists like Ashtabhakra discover that the spiritual effulgence of Brahma is the cause of all causes. But in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord Himself declares that He is the source of impersonal Brahma, and therefore He, the personality of Godhead, is the ultimate cause of all causes. It is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. Very potent purport by Srila Prabhupada. Really, he included, he put the entire Vedic philosophy, different aspects of Vedic philosophy into this purport. In the previous one, Prabhupada pointed out that there are six different branches of philosophy, and those six different branches of philosophy have been propounded or expanded by six great philosophers: Kanad, the author of Vaisheshika philosophy; Gautam, the author of logic; Patanjali, the author of mystic yoga; Kopila, the author of Shankha philosophy; Jaimini, the author of Karma Mimamsa; and Vasudeva, the author of Vedanta Darshan. So, in this one, expanding the verse, Srila Prabhupada explained in the purport that there are different branches or different aspects of philosophical speculation, and as a matter of fact, these different branches of philosophical conclusions are different grades of spiritual realization. Actually, Vedic philosophy is spiritual philosophy. All these six branches, apparently some of them may appear to be atheistic, but ultimately their conclusion accept a supreme being or the absolute truth. And that is the most wonderful factor of the Vedic philosophy. So, In the shlok, I'll read the translation again. Dharma is saying, everyone knows the background of this verse. Yeah? The background is Maharaj Parikshit saw the bull is standing on one leg and the three legs are broken and the cow is crying. This bull is actually dharma, religiosity personified, and the cow is the mother earth. And so he inquired, what is the cause? Who actually inflicted this kind of pain and atrocity upon you? So in response to that question, dharma is replying, and in this one dharma is saying, in this verse, some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. There's a branch of philosophers, those who say that one himself is responsible for his suffering and enjoyment, for his happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible. That is, daiva, the the supernatural powers, the different departmental heads in the nature controlling different departments of the nature, like the air department, water department, fire department, rain department, wealth department. So these all different departments are controlled by different demigods. So there's a branch of philosophers, those who say that ultimately daiva is the cause of everything. Man acts, and the daiva, or the divine agents of the Lord, grant the enjoyment or suffering to the living entity. So daiva is the ultimate cause of suffering and enjoyment. Yet, others say that activity is responsible, that karma is responsible. As one acts accordingly, he suffers or enjoys. And the gross materialistic people maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. Everything is created out of nature, everything is produced out of nature, so nature is the ultimate cause. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa. So that is also one way of approaching. So actually all these approaches are right, depending on from what angle of vision, from what perspective one is looking at them. Like, there is a story that two persons saw a leaf from two different directions. And one said that the color of the leaf is red, and the other said the color of the leaf is green. So they began to fight with each other, and finally they picked up, the fight became so intense that they picked up their bows and arrows and they shoot each other and killed each other. And then when they were shot by the arrows and when they fell, then one who was claiming that the leaf is green saw the other side of the leaf that was red. And the other one, he fell on this side, and he saw that the color of the leaf is green. So, sometimes there are some leaves that has one side of the leaf is green, and the back, the bottom part of the leaf, is sometimes red. So, it depends from what perspective one is looking. And from his own perspective, he is right. That's why we do not make a relative conclusion. We do not conclude what it appears to be like from my perspective, from our individual perspective. We simply take the absolute perspective, Krishna's perspective, Krishna's angle of vision. What Krishna says, let us consider that. And that is the ultimate understanding. And an intelligent person will take that. Krishna is absolute, and Krishna's angle of vision is absolute, Krishna's understanding is absolute, and Krishna's presentation is absolute. So if we just get tuned up to Krishna, by means of Krishna consciousness, then we also will have the absolute understanding. But otherwise, if we just look at it from our individual perspective, then some of us will say it is red, some of us will say it is green. And there is also another very nice story about four blind people went to see an elephant. You know the story? So, one who, they are blind, they cannot see the elephant in totality. So, the blind people see things by touching. So one touched the elephant's legs and said that, oh, elephant is like a pillar. He felt that the elephant is actually like a pillar. Someone touched the elephant's tusk, and to him the elephant appeared to be like a huge radish, like a radish, or you can say a huge carrot. Because the tusk of an elephant is like a carrot, but big. And another one touched the elephant's ear. And in India, there is a thing called, it's a kind of a bamboo plate. They use that to separate grain from the husk. It's called kulo. So he said that the elephant is actually like a kulo, that they use the, it's a big, huge plate made of bamboos, made of bamboo strips. I think it's three of them. Oh, yeah. The other one touched the elephant by the tail and said that, oh, elephant, and to him, the elephant appeared to be like a broom. That you used to sweep the floor. So, now, in the material nature, we all are blind people. Every living entity, every conditioned living entity is blind. So if he looks at it, if he tries to understand the absolute truth, from his individual perspective, he will end up with all kinds of misleading conceptions. The elephant is neither like a pillar, nor like a radish, nor like a kulo, or nor like a broom. Elephant is elephant. Elephant has its own individual form. So, if we want to understand the absolute, we must understand the absolute, try to understand the absolute from the absolute perspective, not from our relative perspective. If we do, then we'll end up with all kinds of misleading conceptions. That's why it has been all these speculations have been rejected. No matter how big these people are, actually most of these people, most of these philosophers are great sages. Kanad, Joimini, Dantavakra, Kanad, Joimini, Kopil, Patanjali. So they all are, and Gautam, they all are great, great philosophers. Great philosophers. I mean, if we read their work, I mean, it really blows one's mind. It's such penetrating observation of the nature. The way they have analyzed everything is very, very penetrating. And they were endowed with all kinds of mystic opulences also. They are great personalities, but no matter how great you are, you cannot understand the absolute truth by dint of your own endeavor. Actually, these are such great philosophers or such great scientists that people like Einstein will, you know, look like an insignificant child in front of them. They are actually very, very brilliant scientists and philosophers. Actually, this Kanad has his atomic theory. And that atomic theory, if any scientist approaches this atomic theory, I mean, it will simply blow his mind. I mean, he will realize that their concept of atom or the minutest particle will look like a big boulder compared to their concept of an atom. Because their concept of the Vaisheshika philosophy of Vaisheshika understanding of atom is the minutest particle that is even that is so minute that it is even the cause of or the ingredient of electron. And according to modern science, electron is so minute that they cannot weigh the atomic weight. That electron, according to them, is weightless. That's why electron is zero. Atomic weight of electron or weight of electron is zero. So that means electron, according to them, is non-existent. It's just a charge. It's not a matter. It's a charge. It's so minute. But according to Vaisheshika philosophy, electron will appear to be like a combination of these paramanus. The minutest particle, and this minutest particle, they are actually considering the transformation of Brahma Jyoti, right? Brahma Jyoti is transformed into Mahatattva. And Mahatattva is further transformed into mind and intelligence and false ego, or false ego, intelligence and mind, due to the influence of the gunas of the nature. And then comes the ether. Now, modern science actually cannot conceive what ether actually is. It's just a concept. According to them, ether is not material. I mean, ether is not made of some elements, although it is a criterion. It's so subtle. According to them, fire is not a matter. Fire is just an energy. What to talk about air? Actually, we can see that the Vedic philosophy is very, very profound, very penetrating observation. And but still, although they are very, very qualified people, very brilliant, they are so brilliant, their observation is so penetrating, that they could actually define the minutest particles. But still, they end up with a wrong conclusion. Unless and until we put the absolute criterion, Krishna, everything is actually meaningless. The way Prabhupada used to say, that all these material accomplishments amount to zero. Now you may have 25,000 zeros. Does it make anything? Does it mean anything? No. Without the one, everything is zero. Everything is useless. But the moment you put one on the left-hand side of the zero, then everything becomes meaningful. Every zero multiplies the value by 10 times. One zero is 10, two zeros are 100, three zeros are 1,000. Four zeros are 10,000, and this way it goes on. Like zero, four zeros, what does it actually mean? But just as you put them next to Krishna or next to one, they become meaningful. So all these conclusions are useless. But if you put Krishna in the center, then they become actually meaningful. And that's what the Vaishnava philosophers have done. To give an example how the Vaishnava philosophers twisted the Mayavad or the impersonalistic philosophical conclusion and made some sense out of their conclusion. To give one example, there is the atheistic Sankhya philosophy propounded by a philosopher called Kopil. This is not the Kopil, the son of Devahuti and Kardama Muni, the incarnation of the Lord Kopil Dev. This is a atheistic Kopil known as Nirishar Kopil or atheistic Kopil. So he analyzed the material nature with 24 considerations. It says, this material nature, analyzing the material nature, first he considered the five elements in the nature, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Then he considered five senses, eyes, ears, nose, touch, and tongue. And then he considered that there are the interaction between these five elements with the five senses give rise to five objects of the senses. The ears interact with ether, sound is produced. Air interacts with the skin, the touch is produced. Fire interacts with the eyes, the form is produced. Tongue interacts with water, and taste is produced. And earth interacts with nose and smell is produced. So due to the interaction between the five elements of the nature and the five senses, five objects of the senses are produced. And then he considered that there are five working senses, the hands, the legs, the belly, anus, and genitals. So, 20. Then he considered there are three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So, 23. Then he considered prakriti or mahatattva, and that is the ultimate consideration, the 24th consideration. He said that is the analysis of the material nature. But then the Vaishnava philosopher stepped in and questioned, all these 24 considerations are objective in nature, but the objects cannot exist without a subject. So the 25th, you have to consider that there must be a 25th consideration, that is the subject. Now what is the subject? The subject is I. I am here, that's why everything is manifest. When I am not here, then nothing will be manifest. So I is important because I is the subject. And I am, because of me, all this material nature is manifest to me. Because of you, this material nature is manifest to you. So you have to take this into consideration. So the subject is I, or Atma, or the spirit soul. Now the soul could not be found anywhere in the material nature. That whole material creation you have analyzed with this 24 considerations, and nowhere you could find this Atma. Hence, the Atma doesn't come from the material nature, the Atma comes from the spiritual nature. So, it is the spirit soul. And then, they didn't stop there. They said, Atmas are minute and many. There are many Atmas. I have an Atma, you have an Atma, he has an Atma, everybody has an Atma. Right? So anything that is minute and many must have an origin. And what is that origin? What is the source of the Atma? The source of the Atma is Param Atma. So according to that consideration, the 26th consideration is Super Soul or Param Atma. 25th consideration is Spirit Soul, and 26th consideration is Super Soul. So Kapila's philosophy is rejected. Forget now all these 24 considerations that you so elaborately made. Now let us consider what's the relationship between the Atma and the Paramatma. Because Atma is a part of the Paramatma, so Atma's business is to become connected to the Paramatma. So this is how even they turn the atheistic Sankhya philosophy and give it a theistic touch. And giving a theistic or spiritual touch, they completely reject the atheistic philosophy. So Vaishnavas are very smart, very intelligent. There is a saying, Jaijan Krishna Bhaje Shevaro Chotur. Those who worship Krishna are very, very smart. Very Chotur actually means cunning, but I didn't want to use the word cunning, because cunning has a negative touch. Vaishnavas relate everything to Krishna, and by relating everything to Krishna, everything becomes meaningful. So Shankaracharya, Mayavad philosophy, had a big conflict with the Vaishnava philosophy. And the Vaishnavas had a big conflict with the Mayavadis. So there was conflicting, like they couldn't come to any proper understanding. But finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave the Achinta Bhedavad Tattva. Some were saying, Mayavadis are saying Bhed. And the Vaishnava was saying Abhed. I'm sorry, Mayavadis are saying Abhed, right? Non-different. It's same. And the Vaishnavas are saying, Vaishnavas say, no, there is difference. There is difference between the Lord, the living entities and material nature. But the Mayavadis say, no, Ishvara, that's the Lord, the Jivas and Prakriti, they all are same. Ultimately, they all are actually from Brahma. Everything is Brahma. Sarvam Khalidam Brahma. And they very, Shankaracharya very smartly described that Brahma, when becomes influenced by the mode of goodness, then he becomes Narayan or Ishvara. And under the mode of passion and ignorance, they are Jivas. Bound by the material nature, conditioned by the material nature. But when they become free from the influence of passion and ignorance and become situated in the mode of goodness, then they become Jivas become Narayan. And when Narayan becomes free from the influence of mode of goodness, then he becomes Brahma. Shankaracharya also is a Vaishnava, so he also is very smart. So he is simply to bewilder the Buddhists, the atheistic people, he presented a theory, a foolproof theory. And Buddhists were defeated. Shankaracharya came to defeat the Buddhists. And he did it very, very nicely, very wonderfully. Buddhists say the ultimate goal of life is to attain Nirvana. And Nirvana means to become nothing. And Shankaracharya said that you are talking about Nirvana. Actually, you borrowed the word from the Vedas. It's a way you reject the Veda. But you take the conclusion of the Vedas, Nirvana. Where do you get that word from? It's a Vedic word. And in Vedas, Nirvana doesn't mean to become nothing, but Nirvana actually means to become everything. To become Brahma, to merge into Brahma. And so with their own language, Shankaracharya defeated them. If Shankaracharya came and gave the Vedic conclusion as it is, then the Buddhists would have immediately rejected them. He said, well, we don't have anything to do with that. So Shankaracharya, there's the expression that you pull out a thorn with another thorn. Right? Like when you get a thorn stuck in your foot, what do? With another thorn you pick it out, pull it out. So Shankaracharya did that. With one thorn, he pulled out another thorn. Like the Buddhists are atheistic, and so semi-atheistic conclusion, Shankaracharya defeated the Buddhist philosophy and established the Vedas. He came to establish Vedas, and he did that. And in order to do that, he had to propound a little bewildering theory called Mayavad. So Shankaracharya, nothing is wrong with Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya came to establish a mission, and he did it by being ordered by Krishna. That's what has been described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That he is harmless, he is faultless. Shankaracharya is not to be blamed. He came to render some service according to his master's order, by Krishna's order. So Shankaracharya made that philosophy of Mayavad, but then later on Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Vishnu Swami and Nimbarkacharya established their respective Vaishnava conclusions. But apparently there was a conflict between the Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas. There was such a big conflict, especially in South India, that some Mayavadis, they would not even listen to the name of Vishnu. Such strong conviction in Mayavadi. Because Mayavad philosophy was logically defeated by the Vaishnava philosophers. Ramanujacharya defeated Shankaracharya's theory very, very wonderfully. Like one argument he gave is that if you believe in God, if you accept that God is, then you have to accept that God is greater than you. You can't say that God is, but He is inferior to you. No one will admit that. So God is great. God is greater than the living entity. Now God, greater means He has something that we do not have. And He has everything that we have. If there is something that we have and He doesn't have, that would mean that He is inferior to us. So then he made the argument, if you admit that God is great, and then you say that you have something that God doesn't have, then it is self-contradictory. If you say that you have forms, but God doesn't have forms, that means you have something that God doesn't have. So indirectly you are making God inferior to you. So you have to admit that God has form. But His form is spiritual, whereas your form is material. And then he made another wonderful point he made is actually defeating, opposing this argument, the Mayavadis can come up with an argument that yes, but this form is illusory. Right? This form is actually illusion. So since God is free from illusion, God doesn't have this form. Right? Ishvara doesn't have the form. So that could have been their argument. So to defeat that one, Ramanujacharya made another point. He said Shankaracharya's argument about material nature being illusory is like the way we consider a rope to be a snake in darkness. The same way, we are mistaking this material nature to be real. This material nature is not real, it is illusory. But the way a rope appears to be like a snake, due to illusion, the same way, we are experiencing the reality out of this illusion of this material nature. Ramanujacharya said, fine. But there may not be a snake in the rope, but somewhere the snake must be existing. That's why you mistake the rope to be a snake. If there is no concept of snake, there is no question of mistaking the rope to be a snake. So, this material nature is illusory, accepted. But somewhere the reality exists. That's why we mistake this material nature to be real. And I mean, with this point, he's completely knocked him out. So we can see that the Vaishnava philosophers are extremely intelligent, and they are intelligent because they have the understanding of the absolute truth. If you know the truth, then everything becomes easy for your understanding. We do not have to become big philosophers, big thinkers. We simply have to understand Krishna, and then everything will become crystal clear. Like when the sun comes up, then you do not need a very powerful vision to look at things. Everything becomes visible in front of your eyes. Due to the light of the sun, you can see yourself, you can see the sun, and also you can see everything around you. So the same way, when we become Krishna conscious, then in the light of this Krishna consciousness, we can see everything as it is. We do not have to go into big mental speculation. We simply have to repeat what has been written in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Nectar of Devotion. And even the greatest philosophers will be defeated by even a child from Gurukul in our movement. Prabhupada actually challenged once. He said, you bring all your big philosophers and scientists and you take any of my disciples and I can guarantee that he will defeat him. He will defeat them. Also Prabhupada once said, somebody asked Prabhupada, you are so wonderful, nobody ever could defeat you. Prabhupada said, how can anyone defeat me? Because I am sane, whereas they all are insane. How can some mad people defeat a sane person? So in the material nature, all these people are actually mad. Being influenced by the material nature, Maya Pishachi, Maya has been compared to a witch. And when somebody is under the influence of a witch, he becomes mad. So everybody in the material nature is actually mad. Only the devotees are sane people, right-minded people. So how can a madman defeat a right-minded person? He cannot. Because madman, he just talks incoherently. He doesn't have any understanding whatsoever. Whereas a devotee has the perfect understanding because he knows Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda. Does anybody have any question?
Yes. Sure. You were saying that on the subtle plane, the Yamas may be waiting for you. Are the visitors on the subtle plane too? Or are they on the
No, they're on the spiritual plane.
But they come down and speak the other.
Because when you take Krishna's name, at the time of leaving your body, right, when you have given up your gross body, then if you can just remember Krishna, then even your subtle body falls off. Right? Whatever little subtle attachments you have related to the body, that becomes also free. And then, in the spiritual platform, you relate to the Vishnu Dutas. Or the Vishnu Dutas, sort of pull you out into the spiritual platform. And Jamadutas cannot come near, because they cannot stand the glaring effulgence of the spirit soul. Any other questions? They learned many different things. Krishna will give us all the powers, all different abilities Krishna will give, provided we become qualified. You see, it's like the father is a millionaire, right? But if the child, when the child is 6 years old or 5 years old, the father doesn't give all the money to the son. Because he knows that he can't utilize the money properly. He'll squander it. He may put the money in a bank, but keep it in a safe keeping. When the child grows up, then he will get the money, inherit the money. Right? The same way, Krishna is our Supreme Father, and he is all-powerful, omnipotent. And actually, he'll give us everything that he has. But we have to wait for the time when you have become ready to receive it. Otherwise, Krishna won't give it. I go to think of it, like when we are unqualified, if Krishna gives us some mystic power, what will happen? We'll simply misutilize it, right? And we'll fall down. So that's why Krishna doesn't give all those powers to us. But when we become qualified, then Krishna will give. Don't worry, Krishna will give you all the potencies. And Prabhupada also said that in our movement, Prabhupada said that the generation after, next generation, the children will be born with mystic power. You see, the children born in Krishna consciousness, in ISKCON, or in Krishna consciousness, the generation after the next generation will have mystic power. They will be, you know, great devotees, you know, with all kinds of mystic potences that you are talking about. Now, the understanding is, at least according to my, you know, limited concept, is that we are not purified enough. That's why Krishna won't give us this power. Even the next generation will not be pure enough. But there will be some who are pure. The children, those who are born, in Krishna consciousness, they are very, very elevated personalities. To be born in Krishna consciousness is not easy. To be born as a devotee, as children of devotee mother and father, is not an easy thing. It's a very, very elevated birth. But still, it is not elevated enough. Their children will be even more elevated. And they will have their mystic powers. Like, go to think of it, often we think, like, if we got a little chintamani, little touchstone, we could have touched it with some metal, and we could have made it into gold, and we could have made big, big temples, and we could have spread Krishna consciousness. It's true. But the thing is that if we think deeply, then we'll realize that if we got the touchstone, and if we could have so much wealth, then probably instead of using them in Krishna's service, we would have used them in our sense gratification, and thus we would have fallen down to Maya. So that's why Krishna is not giving us this facility. And on top of everything, in this generation, in this age, gold is one of the places where Kali is. So wherever there is gold, there is Kali. You know that? The fifth place that Parikshit Maharaj gave to Kali is gold. There are four places, meat eating, intoxication, gambling and illicit sex. And the fifth place he assigned to him was gold. Gold means wealth. So wherever there is wealth, unnecessary accumulation of wealth, there is Kali. So we have to be very, very careful. So we are satisfied. We do not really need big power or big opulence. All we need is Krishna. And Krishna is there, sitting in our hearts. So we have everything. We have Krishna. So what do we need? What else do we need? We'll be happy. We do not also need big, big temples for ourselves. We need big temples simply to attract people. For ourselves, we would be happy just living under a tree. So we are simply on the, as a matter of fact, these big arrangements become a disturbance to a devotee's devotional service. Sometimes Prabhupada used to get very disturbed because Prabhupada used to say, "Now you all manage. You all free me from this management, you all manage, and let me just translate." So devotees don't want anything from Krishna. All he wants from Krishna is love for him, nothing beyond that. Is it clear? Someone who is preaching to? Yeah. What did I say yesterday? I don't remember. Oh, I see, I see.
Right.
I mean, I just said that, you know, like how humble Prabhupada is. Like, although that person was just a hippie, right? He just heard chant Hare Krishna. Right? So, Prabhupada began to chant Hare Krishna. Right? This shows that how humble Prabhupada is. Prabhupada didn't go to him to take advice how to become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada is a pure devotee. Prabhupada is constantly chanting Hare Krishna. Right? No, we should not take advice from outsiders like that. We do not go to the outsiders for advice. On the other hand, for spiritual advice, we look for higher authorities in Krishna consciousness. And but if some outsiders sometimes say something that may mean something to us, make a lot of sense, then we should accept it. The way Prabhupada did. I mean, there's no harm in chanting Hare Krishna, right? No matter whoever says, it is true. So that's why Prabhupada accepted it. Isn't it? So we have to take direction from the devotees, not from outsiders. Yeah, so it has to be in line with Shastra and Guru. Devotee is a sadhu, right? Sadhu, Shastra and Guru, these three things go in parallel line. If the sadhu says something that doesn't collide with Shastra and Guru, then it's wrong. If Guru says something that doesn't collide with sadhus and Shastra, then that is wrong, right? So Shastra is the basis, and sadhu and guru have to be in line with Shastra. Now Shastra always is not clear, because Shastra, scriptures has many different injunctions. So it needs to be explained. So it is explained by sadhus, or of the sadhus, there is one who is very special in our spiritual life, that is the Guru. So this is what our understanding is. We just don't say things whimsically. The person said, he may not have been a sadhu. Right? Chant Hare Krishna. Now that is the injunction of the Shastra. Right? So Prabhupada accepted it. So Shastra, books are the basis. Prabhupada's books are the basis. So whoever is giving directions must give directions according to Prabhupada's books. If there is any deviation from Prabhupada's books, we immediately reject that. Prabhupada said, my books are going to be the law books for 10,000 years to come. And Prabhupada's books are non-different from Krishna's words. Right? So that is where we have our guideline. And besides, if you have any confusion, you go to the higher authority. The higher authority will dispel your doubts. There are so many senior devotees in the movement. If some devotee's advice does not really click, then you can go to the other senior devotees and ask, well, Prabhu, I have been told like that. Do you think it's all right? And if he says yes, it's all right, then you can. It has been confirmed by the sadhu. Yeah. You have a question? Yeah. All qualities that are in the spiritual world are in the material. No, it's the other way around. Everything that is in the material nature is also there in the spiritual nature. But everything that is in the spiritual nature is not necessarily here in the material nature. Right? Devotees? Proud, I see. Devotees are not proud. Devotees are proud of only one thing, that is Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Krishna and Krishna consciousness. That's the only pride. And this pride is something like being the son of a very rich man or a very famous man. You naturally become proud. You can't help it. Right? So when you realize that you are the children of Krishna, you belong to a very spiritual, aristocratic line, the line of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada. Naturally you become proud. Yes, we become proud because of our spiritual heritage. This is not a mundane pride. This is not vanity. This is the pride, spiritual pride. Like the Jodhus are very proud because they are Krishna's family members. That's why they didn't hesitate even to fool around with the sages. They knew that they belong to Krishna and they are safe. No matter whatever they do, Krishna will always protect them. So that's why they didn't hesitate. They knew that they are great sages. And they went and fooled around with them. They tried, made joke of them. Right? And they cursed. But what was the result of their curse? Do you know what was the result of their curse? The result of the curse was that they all went back to Krishna. So it was a blessing. It was not a curse. Actually, the curse turned into a blessing. Same thing with Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj didn't hesitate, when he got to know about the curse, that the Brahmin boy Sringi cursed him that he would die in 7 days. Parikshit Maharaj said, "Wonderful. Now the time has come to go back to Godhead. So let me just fix my mind on the lotus feet of Krishna." So that is how a devotee thinks. The devotee is always dependent on Krishna. And that is his pride. How to defeat this point? there are many ways we can defeat it. First of all, the mode of goodness also is material, right? But Narayan is spiritual. So how can Narayan or the incarnation be influenced by the modes of material nature? That's self-contradictory. Narayana Parabhyaksat. He is beyond the unmanifest. Right? Paro Abhyakta. Abhyakta means unmanifest. And Paro means beyond. Manifest nature, beyond this manifest nature is the unmanifest nature. Right? Brahma Jyoti. And beyond Brahma Jyoti, or beyond this unmanifest nature, is the spiritual sky. So Narayana actually belongs to the spiritual. If you say that Narayan or incarnations of Vishnu are the products of the material nature or the products of Maya or the illusory energy, you are contradicting the scriptures. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you. Jai Srila Prabhupada.